handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is 11:40 a.m. on Sunday, April 11th, in the year of our Lord, 2021. I just got finished watching Mass on YouTube live streaming because I'm basically over my second dose of Moderna. I got that on Friday and felt a little queasy and then started to feel a little like I never got like chills or sweats or anything, so I was good, but I had a bad headache for about a day and was feeling on the very fatigued, like almost like I had pulled an all-nighter, like as I want to do traveling the country, like, oh, I took a Greyhound from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. and got a half hour of drooling sleep on a stranger, and now I go home and I'm in a perpetual state of like fog. That it was that kind of tired, the kind of tired where I'm like, if I don't get a good night's sleep tonight, I'm going to get sick. But I slept all right last night, and every hour that goes by, I feel better and better. But didn't feel like I nodding off in Mass. So out of respect, I just watched the live stream in my living room. So Cookie got to attend Mass when they did Peace Be With You. And with your spirit, I just gave Cookie a little pound on the paw. So that was Cookie's first Peace Be With You. Because she's not afraid of human contact right now. Because she doesn't have COVID, and she allowed me to touch her paw because I am double vaxxed. Even though I have another 12 days until it's official. So I feel very excited about that. Not excited about the fact that we're never going to get to herd immunity because we have, a combination of stupid people in this country. Some people who are vaccine hesitant for any number of reasons, which I'm really kind of dismissive of all the reasons across the board. I know the reason for if there are black people who are hesitant, people bring up the Tuskegee experiments, which I'm sure everybody is super aware of, right? Wrong. But then it's obviously Republican men, evangelicals, white evangelicals who are the most hesitant. That stems, I think, of course, from being fucking losers. And what I mean by that is I don't care how big you are, strong you are, rich you are. There's a feeling, I think, of Let me put it to you this way. Feeling impotent in your career or your life is very tough. And I speak from experience with my comedy career, my constant frustrations about constantly feeling powerless to strengthen my comedy career and get it to where I want it to go. But the answer to that for me is to just wallow in it and accept it and use my voice to complain about it on this podcast. But that's it. That's you know, sometimes you have to face facts that shit won't work out, or shit is not how you want it to be. And them's the breaks. You can complain, but you don't take action with that feeling to endanger other people. And when I look at the, you know, delusionally paranoid and victimized white Republican men of this country, and it feels like not getting a vaccine is their way to be like, I'm going to prove I have power. I have power because you're not making me take no vaccine. And it's like, oh, wow. Wow. What a bold move to endanger your fellow citizens and prevent herd immunity, because the only option you have to feel that you have freedom and power and agency is to fuck over other people. That's what it is. So, you know, I don't know that we'll get to herd immunity. Hopefully we do. But, you know, we have Americans and the internet were not a good combo overall. That's my opinion. But we have way too many insecure, stupid, angry people in this country who weaponize that anger and project that insecurity onto other things rather than taking responsibility and, you know, just owning, owning that, you know what, the best thing you can do in a scary situation is wear a fucking mask and get the vaccine. Like, you know, you're at the mercy of science and of bigger powers than yourself. And you could help everybody by doing those two things. But when you're a loser and you have no, you feel powerless, one thing you can do is do what's right. The other thing you can do is do what's wrong, but feel like you made a choice and feel like you did something within your power that people didn't want you to do, or that like made you feel like you were standing up for something when all you're doing is endangering yourself and others and being an asshole. But other than that, I think we're going to do great with vaccinations. So I got my second shot, wasn't feeling great, but it's basically gone now. But like I said, I was half nodding off on the couch during the homily, not because it was boring, just because I was still just super tired and I didn't want to do that in the church, which is across the street from where I live. So it's not a big ask to get there, but I just didn't want to be rude. And also now I feel like I'm so close to immunity, just 12 more days till like it takes full hold. But I thought, you know what, why don't we play this a little extra safe? You know, we're near the finish line, the personal finish line, so let's play this safe. But I decided to do the podcast today. A couple of things were bothering me, of course, from social media. So I said, you know what, let's not forget this angry energy we've got. And one thing I haven't posted, and it dawned on me I wanted to post it, but I said, just leave it alone. But no lip sync videos. Have you noticed this? no lip sync videos in the last like 5 months for anybody. Not Queen C, and not from anybody really. And I can't help but laugh. And Righteous Prick listeners will appreciate this morbid de gallows humor for me. But I can't help but think lip sync was a bunch of bullshit forever. Then all of a sudden, I got famous for impressions. And then for the next 6 to 7 months, when my career was having its biggest moment, it was overshadowed and burdened by lip sync becoming a quote-unquote genius form of comedy. Then algorithms, I start to fade a little bit in terms of the algorithmic power of what I post. And haven't seen a fucking lip sync video since. So I can't help but laugh in a very supervillain kind of way. So let me get this straight. The only 7 months in human history where lip sync was considered a legitimate quality form of entertainment. The only 7 months in the history of mankind and entertainment where lip sync was considered a viable, intelligent, creative form of entertainment was 7 months in 2020, and that's it. And now I haven't seen a fucking lip sync video from anybody, not just her, but anybody. And I'm just like, I laugh at that and go, that's incredible. It didn't happen in 2019. It didn't happen for part of my run and part of my... No, it like just kind of overlapped my run where all of a sudden for impressions became the second favorite way of people to imitate just for those 7 months. And now we're back to like impressions being good. And, you know, I see Jimmy Kimmel has used a different Trump impersonator and a different Mike Lindell impersonator. And that's okay, but it's just you can't help but be sort of bitter, like, oh, my stuff, you know, that my Cuomo impression, just because the algorithms hasn't gotten seen the way it might have been seen. But you don't know how to play these things. I just do the impressions and the sketches when they come to me, and they're good and people like them, but none of them get the same audience. I just did Woke Abbott and Costello, which people really like, but it's, you know, it's only at like 8,000 views or something, which is cool. It was easy enough for me to do, but it's really good. It's basically an Abbott and Costello sketch. I'll include a link in the notes to this show if you give a shit. But basically dealing with non-binary pronouns. So they is on first, them is on second, and those is on third. And I was really, really, really proud of it because I managed to make it, every detail of it sort of made it unassailable. Like at first I was like, oh, our progressive's going to say you shouldn't be making fun of the pronouns. But I do it where like Abbott is in a Biden hat and clearly gets all the pronouns, and Costello is in a MAGA hat and gets none of the pronouns. So I felt like it was a pretty well-constructed, like criticism-proof sketch. So check that out if you want. In May, I will actually, I know I said I wasn't going to do this, but I keep thinking about it, and I feel like the best move for me in terms of both money, but also in terms of getting reps and doing things with fan engagement. I have to get over the fact that, like, as much as I complain, I do have real fans, and I thank you. And so I will be doing something with Jemmy, which is like the Patreon startup. It's not a Patreon company, but it's a startup that's similar to Patreon, but I've been working with them on some stuff for a little while. So I will be doing, no pressure to join, but I am going to make it, I think, pretty enticing to join, especially for fans who are not in like major American cities. Like if you're in foreign countries or something, like there will be live shows and Q&As each month and stuff like that with the membership, as well as like bonus videos, early access. And something very important to me is also just like weekly notices of the sketches I've put out. So it won't be like daily, but each week you'll be able to check in for free if you join. And this is, there'll be like a free tier that just lets people know like, hey, if you're depending on YouTube, if you're depending on Twitter or Facebook to show you my stuff, that's a bad plan. But each week you'll be like, oh, these are the three videos he put up. Oh, cool. I missed this one, or I missed all three, or whatever. So I will be doing something in May once the Hope for Haiti charity fundraising is gone. I didn't want to overlap and start pushing anything of mine while still trying to raise money for Hope for Haiti. We're close. We're close to the 5,000 goal. So if you can, I'll include that link also as I've been doing in the show notes. But yeah, the reason I got on here was I was just very, as happens, I got very annoyed and angry. You read all the comments. The reason I read the comments is because they always preach that like fan engagement is important. So you try to engage with the fans. But I, we blew up the Making Podcasts Great Again accounts really blew up on Twitter and Instagram because of me, because of my videos that started blowing up last year. So our, you know, Instagram went from like, I don't know, 400 followers to like at its peak, 8,500. And our Twitter account went from like 400 followers to 28 or 29,000 at its peak for the show, just for the show. So, but I wasn't on Facebook. I only recently rejoined Facebook simply because I felt desperate enough in terms of pushing some content and some dates that I just wanted, I didn't want to risk during what I consider 2021 to be an incredibly critical year in my career. And as much as I hate Facebook and was off it for 2.5 years, principle is important, but I have one shot here. And this is not about engaging with Facebook. It's just about making sure the people who like my stuff will see it this year, because I would be happy to leave Facebook again once I can tour and once I can, you know, but the Twitter app, I felt no need to join Facebook until Twitter just started suppressing my stuff for reasons I still don't know. So I rejoined Facebook. I didn't feel great about it, but I just felt like, you know what, I gotta, this is a limited window for me. This isn't hopefully a lifestyle choice that I remain on Facebook, but I feel like 2021 is a very limited window for me to expand where I'm at and make sure that fans I actually have see my stuff. And maybe it won't work, but I'm hoping it does. But Facebook I was not on. And Facebook, I don't think it was a coincidence, was totally fucking dragging. You know, and Facebook is a humongous goddamn platform. And we did have a show page on Facebook because, you know, I was not, I try not to rule by dictatorship when I'm in a partnership. But Instagram and Twitter grew simply because I was growing. There was no like concerted hardcore effort, but we needed an effort on Facebook and that effort was not made. And as I joined Facebook a year later, after blowing up, I noticed that our engagement was terrible. Our posting was inconsistent. So what I did today, and it was only the second time I've done it, I said on Instagram, where we used to take a lot of questions, we do monthly questions on Making Podcasts Great Again via Twitter and Instagram. So I said, hey, this month it's the second month I've done it, but it's just simply to increase engagement on Facebook for people who are already on. I don't ask people to join Facebook. I know that Facebook sucks. I was fucking off Facebook for 2.5 years, which definitely hurt. It impeded what would have been an even bigger year for me. That I am sure of. Okay, but that's fine. So I wrote on Instagram. I was like, hey, I posted the Facebook post, like a picture of the Facebook post, and said, hey, please, we're taking questions on Facebook this month. That's simply just to build up engagement on Facebook. We've been taking questions for a year on Instagram. I just, you know, for this month and last month, just to get people more aware of our and more engaged on our Facebook page. I'm not going to make it permanent. That's not going to be the thing. So this guy who consistently tries to fucking punch up Joe, like he's one of these like real hacky bros, but probably my least favorite genre of comedy. Like the one who, you know, the guy who imitates Jim Norton and Adam Carolla, but really flops at it. But you can tell those are the guys he likes. But it's like, oh, you're a shit garbage wannabe copy of those. So for the second month in a row, the only two times I've done this, he writes, anybody who's not on Facebook now isn't going to join because it's toxic. So these posts are totally pointless, but sure, disenfranchise us on the gram. Now, I don't think when he says disenfranchise us, I don't think he's being, that's, you know, that's hyperbole, sarcasm, humor. But telling me my post is pointless when there's clearly a point to it, and clearly this isn't something I've been doing regularly, it's been a recent phenomenon just to build up engagement on our page. So I just wrote to the person, you know, not asking anybody to join Facebook, and why are you always an asshole? And I'm more deeply offended by his constant attempts at terrible humor than I am at him calling my posts pointless. But I'm sitting here going, these are fans. And he's the type of guy who, when it'll be like, hey, we have this on our Patreon, he's the type who's always like, fuck that, put it up for free. And it's like, we've been giving you endless free content. But he's that type who's always got to make that comment. And then another comment last night, I wrote that SNL, I wrote a tweet about SNL. I said, death, taxes, and SNL leaning on a game show and a game show sketch and a rap parody sketch in the first half hour, meaning those are the three guarantees in life. So somebody, a fan, writes, love you, JL. But should you really be calling someone out on leaning leaning on something? And the suggestion there was that I was, so dependent on Trump that I shouldn't be calling out SNL. Now, my reply was, okay, first off, I had a 16-year comedy career before my Trump took off that included 5 stand-up albums, late night television appearances, podcasts, and hundreds of sketches that had nothing to do with Donald Trump and had to do with many other impressions and just original ideas. Okay. But you're not a real, you're a lazy fan. because you're probably not aware of all that stuff. So you've seen, six Trump videos, and your idea of that is that's all I am. Like, and that's the thing that I am having such difficulty with in this environment, is that people now trust they will say, I'm a fan of yours, but now they are perfectly okay with Twitter dictating how much, when they see. Like, if Gary Goldman's on tour, I'm going to go to Gary Goldman's website. I'm gonna look up his page if his tweets aren't showing up, because I'm like, what's Goldman doing these days? Because he's one of my favorite comedians. And I also know that social media works a certain way, but I'm also an old school fan that I want to know what my people are doing, not just necessarily what Twitter wants me to see. So I try to impress upon that with people, where I go, please, even if you're seeing this post, sign up for my newsletter. And I, you know, there's like 8 people sign up a week, but I need like hundreds signing up a week. Not because it pays me anything and it costs nothing to sign up, but it's like the real deal is live dates, is getting the fans you build to come out and see you. Now, I've been asking people for weeks to sign up for my newsletter, and just this week somebody wrote, oh man, are you ever coming to DC? Would love to see you live. And I go, please sign up for my newsletter. I've literally posted like 4 or 5 times about my shows in Arlington and Rockville, Maryland. And the person said, oh yes, I'll see you in Arlington. But they had no idea. And that's not their fault. But it's like, but you hope that once you sort of make it clear, like, hey, if you're a fan who wants to see me, thank you so much. The best way to have that happen is to sign up, because your email won't be blocked by a Twitter algorithm or a Facebook algorithm. But most people, they just don't do it. And then it will happen with every fucking show I do. I'm sure I'll go, great show in Magnolia, New Jersey. And then like 2 days later, somebody will go, why didn't you tell me you were a fan? It's like, first of all, I don't know who the fuck you are. Secondly, all I can do is keep posting about the show and telling you where to sign up so that you're guaranteed to see the show. But there's something about fans and the internet and this culture now that it's like, oh, I hate social media, but I trust social media's decisions on what I see. Or at least I implicitly trust social media's decisions on what I see. And it's incredibly frustrating, obviously. But what this person said when they were like, should you be leaning on? I was like, well, first of all, okay, first off, you're ignoring the 16-year career I had before then, where I produced voluminous material and had some real accomplishments, and none of them had anything to do with a Trump impression. Now, last year was like a show. It was like I was starring in a Twitter show called Donald Trump, understandably. But nobody says to Bryan Cranston after 5 seasons of Breaking Bad, dude, enough with the Walter White. And I know that's a stupid comparison in some ways, but it's not in others. And the sad thing is, I was cognizant from day 2, because by April 8th, which was only 2 weeks basically after the first Trump video had blown up, I did a Trump and I want to say Mike Pence video, or a Trump and someone video. So I immediately began working on incorporating other impressions into my videos, because I was like, okay, I know Trump's the headliner, and he's going to be the headliner this year, but I got to start showing people that I can do other things. Then I start doing, you know, I've been doing for many, 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 many months, stand-up Saturdays, where I'm like, hey, here's a good stand-up clip for me from either an album or a club show from different years, just so you get a flavor of my stand-up, and that's every Saturday. And hey, if you like that, get my albums or stream my albums here. Be sure to sign up for dates. If you like my stand-up or if you like my comedy, be sure to sign up for my newsletter so you know when I'm in your town. And since January, I've become fairly respected, I think, for my McConnell, my Andrew Cuomo, my Dave Chappelle, my Donald Trump Jr., my Mike Lindell, and obviously videos like the Abbott and Costello one. And I did another funny thing that was way better than the SNL version of Springsteen and Obama, like podcast outtakes of theirs 2 months ago. So then SNL had like a bad Obama and a bad Springsteen impression doing a sketch. That's okay. I mean, they tried. But so I'm doing all this. And all I'm asking people to do is like, hey, subscribe to the newsletter and maybe subscribe to YouTube channel so that you don't depend on Twitter. Twitter will not show you all that I am. Twitter will show you what it wants to show you, which is usually like, now I see if I post a joke about Matt Gaetz, he seems to be just like Marjorie Taylor Greene or Lauren Boebert. They're kind of the new Trump in terms of algorithms and heat. that you can get from a tweet. So I post a good joke about Matt Gaetz and it'll get like double the engagement of like a better joke that has nothing to do with like the it politician scumbag of the moment. I'm complaining to you guys because I'm hoping you guys are probably, you know, the choir. You guys are the ones who will listen to my, who listen to this shit and probably sign up for the newsletter. I hope you do. And even if you don't, at least by this podcast is like a fun and or depressing way of getting, because you know I'm going to give you the information here. But you know what? It still helps to sign up for the newsletter. But yes, if you listen to this podcast, maybe you don't need to, but I'd appreciate it if you would. But so this is a person who was comparing me being quarantined in my apartment, doing a lot of Trump videos in a year where that was basically, you know, the hit, one of the hit shows of Twitter, to SNL, who've been leaning on the same tropes and lazy sort of framework for like a decade and have a full studio and a writing staff. And I was like, I told the person, keep your, he said, I heart you, but JL, do you think, and I just wrote, keep your heart, like keep your love for my comedy, because you're a useless fan. And I mean that. Like, I can take constructive criticism as much as it may seem like I can't. I can engage with fans. I can have a give and take with people. But I don't need fans who are so disengaged from my work but still feel that because they've liked a few of my videos, they can, like, categorize my work. It's, like, it's bizarre. It's this combination of, like, laziness, but you think because I've replied to a couple of tweets that you're now somehow you have some sort of worthwhile opinion on my work, even though you seem to be completely ignorant of my work. It's very bizarre. And I keep trying to tell people one by one because the shit doesn't reach people in the masses anymore. But I'm like, when somebody said to me, oh man, you should do a Mike Lindell. They told me that this week. And I was like, I think I've done 6 or 7 Mike Lindell videos since January, different videos. Please subscribe. And I don't get snarky with that because that's still somebody who's asking for things. Like they are hope. But as I've said before on this podcast, the other thing I kind of resent, not in that case, but do no impressions, be a quote unquote character. Fucking bullshit. Do a character, which seems to be on the internet, be a faux Christian Southern MAGA person. That's like that character is being done by like 100 different people, a quote unquote character. And you do that, people call you a genius. You write or craft or improv 10 hours of original material and do it in 20 different voices and personas that exist. So you have to replicate things, not just sort of come up with a generic, quote unquote, character that dozens of people seem to be doing. And people treat you like a jukebox. And it's such an irony. It's such a catch. Is it a catch 22? Like, if I didn't do any characters, then I wouldn't be showcasing my talent, but maybe more people would call me a genius. But because I showcase so much, people then treat you like a fucking Johnny Rockets jukebox where they're just like, now do a Matt Gaetz, do a Joe Biden. I'm like, well, I can't do those, but I hope you enjoy the 40 that I've given you. And by the way, can you subscribe to my YouTube or sign up for my newsletter? Like, at least if you're going to make demands, like I'm a fucking, singing Candy Graham or whatever the fuck. At least help me out in that way. I'm not asking you for any money, but I just don't this is why I have to get to comedy clubs, because at least I trust the environment and I trust that ecosystem. That if I crush in a comedy club, that means you are in a comedy club to see stand-up comedy. And then when you become a fan, you will become a fan of stand-up comedy and you will buy my album and you will appreciate more of what I do versus people who treat, you know, for in polite ways and rude ways alike, who treat me like some sort of, just dance monkey, like kind of shit. And I'm not saying it's like that, but it's like, I'm not even saying it's conscious, but that's, we've cheapened comedy so much that now, you can lip sync, you can do one character, or you can do 400 different things and you will be treated like equal levels of talent. And then it becomes a question of, well, what was the point of all that work and all that effort if I'm just going to be some sort of Twitter distraction for people instead of appreciated and respected as a real comedian. So those two comments this morning really, really angered me because these are so-called fans. And I guess, you know, fans nowadays are just, you know, a guy can flaunt that he doesn't support your Patreon and thinks your social media posting is stupid because he doesn't understand what you're doing. And that person considers themselves a fan. And I'm like, you're not a fan. You're not even, you're not a friend. You're not a fan. And you're not even a fucking respectful human being, apparently. You're some fucking cowardly bro bitch who like, you know, and I've seen this in audiences. This is my favorite. Like, one of my favorite things in audiences is when, like, it's always uncomfortable when a wife or girlfriend likes you more than the guy. Now, there are plenty of guys who are totally confident and comfortable. But sometimes a woman, like, oh my God, you're so funny. And like the guy will be like, you were pretty good. And who gives a shit? But it's like this, I need to show you that I'm not like, I don't think you're that good because somehow some of my masculinity will be tested if I like effusively praise a comedian for being really funny because me and my girlfriend were laughing a lot. It's not often, but at least once a weekend. The things I can guarantee when I do a comedy club weekend is multiple people will question me about my race, and at least two dudes will have some sort of uncomfortable, like, you were all right, man. You're pretty good. And it's like, okay, good, good, good. I get it. No man sucking your dick. You're tough. You don't concede shit to a comedian. Good for you, sir. Thanks for coming to the show. And that's what this guy feels like on Instagram. He's always dropping these like vulgar, like he's always trying. It's just like, get the fuck out of here. Fuck off, you rude fucking cunt. That's how I feel. Like I'm done. It's you're gonna like this comedy career that I have had. As Whitney Houston said, you can't take away my dignity. The greatest love is putting out good work even when nobody gives a shit. Now, I'm at the end of my rope when it comes to that because I would like people to now start buying my stuff, seeing my stuff live, and we'll get to that. I have some very good announcements. I know this feels like a podcast without any good news, and there's more bad news to come, but there's good news as well, and we're spreading the good news on this Sunday. But you're going to respect me, or I am fine losing you as a fan. Because for, let's say, 88% of my career, 88%, let's say 85%. For 85% of my career has been about, I'm a good comedian and a good sketch writer and a good impersonator, and I'm going to invest in myself and make good sketches, pay editors to make these better than I could make them. And I'm going to write good material and put out good albums. And so what if it only sells 103 copies? Those 103 people are going to love it. And then people will hear me on Sirius and occasionally email me or tweet me that they heard a great bit of mine. And I'll feel good because I'll say the work is being respected. And one day I'll get my chance and the money and the career will come. But for most of my career, self-respect, dignity, and pride have been the only currency that I have been able to count on. Pride in my work, dignity in doing good work and not selling out and not trying to be someone else because it might be a quicker path to something. So when somebody disrespects me, I haven't been successful enough for it to be a business. You know, I'm never going to do it, no matter how big I get, I'm never going to do a credit card commercial. Okay. Like there are certain things I won't do with my career because it has a foundation that is more than money. I bet on myself too much that it's about me. And when you disrespect me, I don't get if this person's not a patron. I don't give. Take your fucking money. Take your likes. Take your. I don't need. I don't want you to be a fan of mine. The same way I told a bunch of MAGAs in like April. Oh, fuck you if you support Trump. Like, I don't care if you like my impression. If you want to keep your politics silent and give it a like and come to see me in a show, that I can't stop you and I won't stop you. But if you want me to be somebody who's like, can't we all agree? No, not on this one. Like, I am making fun of Trump because I think he's a piece of shit. If he wasn't a piece of shit, but I could do a great impression, of course I'd do it. But the reason my impression bites harder is because I fucking think the man's a scumbag. And I think people who support him are if not morally bankrupt, morally overdrawn from their accounts. And I don't know. A troll is easy to dismiss. And a troll will say, you're a fucking unfunny hack. And you're like, you can reply or you can ignore or whatever. But it's like, okay, well, if I thought that opinion had any merit, then I would quit comedy. But I know I'm not, and you don't like me for some reason, and so be it. Who gives a shit? But when fans, when the people who claim to support your work and enjoy your work disrespect the work, that's really disheartening. Because then you have to question your fan base. I don't have to question trolls. It's like, you're a troll. You're a loser. Like, fuck off. Do whatever. I don't give a shit about what you think. But when fans turn out to be disrespectful or not appreciative or not engaged in your work, but still feel the need to like flex some opinion on who you are or what your work is, that's very disheartening, because you go, well, now you've told me maybe I can't trust my fans and my fan base. And that is much more enraging and disheartening. The same way when I can't get people to sign up for a free newsletter to make sure that they know when I'm coming to their city or when an album gets released, that's really disheartening, because that's why I do this. I don't do this to be a distraction in your home office for 6 minutes a day or an hour a day. I do this because I want to perform live and have a career as a stand-up comedian and possibly sketch actor. So that's what matters to me. And it seems just that people don't engage, they don't research, they don't, like, if, when I became a fan of Bill Burr, and I've always said to people, I said, I'd probably have been a great comedy fan if I didn't get into comedy. I'd be a great fan of comedy. I still am a great fan of comedy, but, you know, it makes you a little more bitter doing it for so many years and a little less enjoying it. But when I started watching Bill Burr, like, I bought his, like, third album, maybe, or fourth album was like the first thing I bought of his. But then I immediately was like, oh, let me buy albums 1, 2, and 3. Like, I want to engage in this. I think this guy's one of the great comics I've ever heard. So I want to get more of that. I want to be engaged with this dude's content because I'm a fan. And now it feels like fan often means I am a sort of barely active person in need of distraction, and you're one of the people I like to be distracted by. But if I will trust the algorithms to feed me whatever they want to feed me, and I won't, you know, and it's, I don't know, it's not a great place to be, I guess. I'm still pursuing management to no avail, but I'm making some more contacts and hoping some stuff starts, because, you know, I'd like to, I'll put out an album myself this year. That's fine. That's par for the course. And it will sell better than my other albums because I have so many more people paying attention. But at the same time, I want a special. I want to be on HBO Max. Like, I want a sketch show and a stand-up special on HBO Max. I need people with contacts who can make that happen. That's what I want. And the Hail Mary here for me, even though it doesn't feel like it should be a Hail Mary, given my credentials and my skills, but it feels like a Hail Mary, but I don't think it should be a Hail Mary. But, you know, getting a special on a big platform and doing like a sketch show, that would kind of break the algorithm hold, because all of a sudden maybe I pick up another 80,000 followers who have nothing to do with Twitter. They just go and find me. And now the equation or the algorithm is totally reconfigured because all these new people just went and found me. But I don't know. As I said, as we had a very popular episode of this podcast a couple months ago, only dumb fans. Bad fans are 100 times worse for me than trolls. Because the troll, I just don't care or respect your opinion. But when the disrespect or the laziness is coming from within the house, that's much more disturbing. So, I don't know. Shows, folks, shows. Okay. Because the thing is about my stand-up is very funny and is pretty much apolitical. So it's kind of weird that I'm trying to get, obviously my stand-up shows will not be like this podcast is my point, but I am in Magnolia, New Jersey on April 27th. That's the big comeback show. The first live show. I will be fully vaccinated a few days before then in terms of like the 2 weeks post second shot. And if you're, I guess, in South Jersey or Philadelphia, I'd love it if you would come out. The ticket link is on my website in the calendar page. And I think if you use the code JLC, I get some money. So, or something, I don't know. But use the code JLC. Either I get money from it or it makes the ticket cheaper for you. One or the other, I guess. But would love for people to come out to that show. I know I'm sure it's not a huge capacity venue. I think it's a bar and it's socially distanced. So it's not like it's going to be some 200 seat venue, I don't think. So hopefully you can make that out if you're somewhere in that area. 8 p.m. on April 27th. The big shows are the D.C. area. May 13th, I have 2 shows in Arlington, Virginia. And then on May 15th, I have 2 shows in Rockville, Maryland. And I think they're trying to add a show for that Friday. But, oh, please, if you are a listener or a fan or a friend from the Maryland, D.C., Virginia area, please. I don't want to sound desperate. I think the shows will sell fine. But please get tickets to those. That's a big deal for me. And then the biggest deal of them all in terms of career potential is I am headlining the Hartford Funny Bone on June 10th, which is a Thursday. And the Hartford show, just simply put, Cookie, get out of there. The Hartford show, the DC shows and the Jersey show are about my ego. And getting in reps, but I'd like to sell well. I'd like friends that book those shows to see that I can put asses in the seats and that this whole 2020 thing wasn't just a mirage. But the Hartford Funny Bone, which was by the way, here's the good news. Finally, a booker got back to me, and it was Dave Stroop, who books the Funny Bone and Improv chains, many of them. And I wrote to him, and I said, hey, he actually apparently read my email, which was nice, first off. And I basically told him, I was like, I've been a feature for a while with you, but I did have this breakout year, and here's like the press coverage, and here's the stats and all that. And he said, congrats on your, on the new exposure. Here's what I can do. So he offered me, he said, we'll give you an off night. If you sell that out, you can do a second night. And they're basically going to use my appearance in Hartford as a metric for getting me more headlining work. So obviously if I sell out a Thursday show, that would be amazing. And I get 80% of the door. but it's not, the real point of it is sell that out. If they have to add Cookie, Jesus Christ. I don't know if you guys are picking up, but that's not me beating off. That's Cookie just drinking water like a maniac. They'll add a Wednesday show if I sell that Thursday show out. But what that means is now, and I know I have a lot of fans in Boston and a good amount of fans in Connecticut, so I'm really hoping if you're listening to this that the ticket link should be ready sometime this week. So I hope you'll check in on my website for that. But I cannot, like I said, the New Jersey show, I want a crowd there because I'm bringing the heat. And it's my first show since this. So if, like I said, if you're in the Philly, South Jersey area and you can make it and you feel comfortable going, hopefully at least vaccinated. I will be fully vaccinated, but you know, for my ego, it'd be great to start this 2021 campaign off with a nice crowd. And then the DC shows are just hugely important to me. It's decent. It's pretty good money. And it's also just, come on, I went to school down there. I was a political comedian hit in 2020, political comedy hit. And so I hope those do really, really well. But the Hartford Funny Bone show, or potentially shows, are the only shows on my calendar right now that have career implications. And if you've listened to this show, like, you know how important this is for me. Obviously, if you live in fucking Iowa, you can't make the show. There's no pressure there. But I'm just, if fans that are reasonably near Manchester, Connecticut, where the Hartford Funny Bone is, if you would mark down June 10th and get tickets as soon as possible when the ticket link becomes available, I don't want to say that's it, but this is, until I get representation or a special, it is once again on the fans to boost me. You know what I mean? Like, so if I sell out Thursday show, then what he'll probably, my guess is what he'll say is, oh, okay, well, I can give you Thursday shows at two more clubs with that deal. How'd you like to do the Albany Funny Bone and the Orlando Improv? I'll give you a Thursday there, same deal, and boom, get after it. And I'll be like, great. And if I were to sell out two shows, a Wednesday, Thursday, then maybe they say to me, all right, well, how'd you like to do a Wednesday, Thursday in Albany and a Wednesday, Thursday in Columbus or whatever? Like, so a bad showing in Hartford can only be catastrophic. A good showing in Hartford could be good, but a great showing in Hartford for me will be good. Like, it will show that there is interest, that and obviously if I'm drawing people in on off nights, that, you know, many people can get their fans out on a Friday, Saturday, and also get like just random comedy fans who are just like, let's go to a show tonight. There's always plenty of those. But a Wednesday, Thursday means these are people coming to see you. So the first order of business is selling out the show. And the good news is for me, they are at a 135 capacity. And friend of the show, Chris Lamberth, I was told to bring an opener, so there'll be a local MC. And as you know from my ethics, and I know Chris listens to this podcast, so I hope he doesn't take offense at what I'm about to say. I have spoken about the need for features to have openings to do at clubs. You know, I have a personal vested interest in that. And it seemed everybody, both humongous stars and no names, would bring their own feature, which, you know, you'd end up going, I'm really good. Yeah, well, so-and-so brings so-and-so. So you only have these 2 weeks to choose from over the next 4 months. So my plan is to generally, unless I'm doing like shows like this, like a one-off show where it's very, you know, it's or I'm doing an album or I'm doing, it seems stupid suggesting this, but theaters or something, of course, then I'm going to bring my own person. But I do want to leave, for the most part, if I ever do get to tour, I would leave feature spots open. I wouldn't bring my own feature most of the time in terms of like the club chain normal weekend stuff, because I think, you know, I think it's important that those spots be open for people like me, or like I was a year ago or whatever, or like I may be 3 years from now. Just kidding. I cannot feature again. I'm sorry. That will be the end of my career. I don't say that with any disrespect, but I can't go back. I cannot go backwards in my career anymore. But Chris will be opening for me on June 10th and maybe June 9th also. So June 10th it's a huge day for me. So the sooner we could sell a lot of tickets to that or sell it out, 135 capacity. So it's certainly not crazy. I will try to get on some Connecticut and Boston radio in May to boost that. But needless to say, if you are a Boston, Connecticut, near Hartford person, you're getting 2 months' notice. That is a huge night for my career. And if I were to get a second show on a Wednesday, needless to say, that is also a huge night for my career. So look for that ticket link to be up on my site sometime this month. I will certainly let you know. And it will definitely be in the May newsletter. So thank you for listening to all that. The only other thing I was going to talk about, I had my meeting with my accountant this week. And I think I understand why rich people hate taxes is because sometimes when you're a regular guy like I was for every year until 2020, you know, you either don't make a shit ton of money off the book, not off the books, but through 1099s, where you know, your employer just takes your taxes out. And at the end of the year, you're like, oh, look at that. I get $2,000 back. Or, oh, look at that. I don't get anything. Or, ah, I owe $180. I owed a tremendous, not afraid of burning in hell. I owed a tremendous amount of money this year. Now, I made a huge self-employed IRA contribution. This is for all my finance heads, all my accounting heads in the building, which offset like $15K of my taxes. But I owed a shit ton, which is fine. It's just difficult when you see your account. Let me put it to you this way, without getting too into the numbers. My account, my bank account in February, in March 15th of 2020 was X. My bank account, my checking account was X, okay? In March of 2021, my combined accounts were 36X. Okay? So, when you see 36X, you're like, oh, shit. Now, only my law firm salary was taxed fully. Everything else I did, from Cameo to everything else, was 1099s. So that was all taxable income that had not been taxed. So, after paying my taxes, and I actually don't quite have the money to pay my federal bill, but it's not due till May 17th. Actually, I shouldn't say I don't have the money. I do have the money, but I have locked up a large chunk of my money in an account where I don't want to move it. So I will have that money by the end of April. So we're all good, but then I need to make a quarterly estimate of payment. I just made a quarterly payment for the first quarter, and I have to make a quarterly payment in June. And I was like, but that's not another quarter. That's only 2 months away. That's going to be a tight squeeze. I will make it. But the reason it's a tight squeeze is because I don't want to move the large chunk of money that I sort of put somewhere. I want to keep that. So I'm back to, oddly enough, living month to month for the next 2 to 3 months because I don't want to move that month. Now, I've done the calculations, and I think I will eke it out. So that's good. But I think that's why rich people hate taxes, is that, like, it's one thing if somebody just keeps taking, like, a few grand from you every month. You're like, eh, okay, that sucks. But hey, yeah. And at the end of the year, you're like, all right, I'm fine. But this way, you see the big number. You never, you know, if they're taking it out incrementally, you never see the big number. But this way, I saw 36X, and I was like, what? And then, unfortunately, what I will be down to after all these tax payments are made, unfortunately, I'll be down to 24X or 25X. And that's still fine. That's still great. But it's only the expectations of, well, why'd you let me see 37X if you were just going to kick me down to 27X? Now, 25X. Now, it would have been 27X if I had not made the huge contribution to my self-employed IRA. But I said, you know what? At least that money's, you know, guaranteed to go to, you know, my spouse or my nephews or my dog when I untimely pass away. But because I always laugh when I think about retiring. I'm like, am I going to make it to retirement? Maybe I will. Maybe I'll be like Bill Russell, just some fucking 6'7", 90-year-old walking around. But, you know, I think I'm destined for somewhere between Patrice O'Neill and Bill Russell. And I just don't know where in between. Where in between 41 and 88 I will land. But I want to say the sad thing, but I inherited I was one of the beneficiaries of my uncle's pension, and it was a nice amount of money. And I took it in a lump sum because I thought that I might be, looking to purchase something this year, possibly. So I figured, oh, you know what, rather than do an annuity, I might want like a bigger chunk of money now. But what it turned out is basically like my taxes, my uncle basically paid my taxes for 2020. And, you know, that's meaningful, and that was very, you know, but it's such a, it made me very depressed. And it's all symbolic. It's all money. It all goes into the same, like, you know, the next X amount of dollars I make just will refill that. And it's like, but there was something, I don't want to say upsetting, but a little sad about being like, so that's it. You get your chunk of, you get your money from your uncle. And of course, this isn't how I feel. My uncle is the memories we have and the love that we had, but not, but it's still hard to just be like, oh, so my uncle, like my portion of his retirement that he, you know, generously gave to me, it was just a tax bill. And now the money he gave me is now gone to the government to pay for my taxes. Now, money doesn't work that way. It's not like I gave the money from his account in one check over to the government. But you're sitting there, it's hard to not look at it and be like, God, that's so, it's depressing. You almost wish you could just be like, no, can I send out the cameo dollars to the government and make sure my uncle dollars go into a home next year that I buy? And of course, money doesn't work that, but it still feels sort of weird. Like it's this weird measurement of a life in a way where you're just like, oh, that's, thank you. Like, you know, if he were alive and I was like, no, thank you, very generous. I will use the money you give me to pay my taxes. So thank you very much. That you'd be like, really? Not on a home, not on a savings account, you're just going to use it for taxes. And like I said, I know that's not how money works, but it's still, I couldn't help but feel just a little depressed about that. The symbolic nature of that, or what felt like a symbolic nature. It's like, and I know it doesn't, but you know, I think you get what I'm saying. I know it doesn't work that way, but it felt temporarily just like, oh, the portion of my uncle's retirement that he gave me went to a tax bill. I don't know. It felt weird, but I am thankful for it. And, you know, it was very helpful. So, and then oddly enough, I'll have to pay some taxes on that next year. So, but my main point is, I think when they take taxes out of your account week to week, month to month, it's like somebody just plucking some nose hairs or something, like bing, ah. When they do it at the end of the year, though, it's like somebody just broke your fucking nose because you saw the full amount. Instead of just seeing like what I have at the end of the year is what I have. Instead, you see, oh my God, look at how much money I have. And then you get the bill, your accountant breaks everything down and you're like, damn. And what I didn't realize is there were certain deductions that I was eligible for during my regular days that I was not eligible for this year. So I was like, oh, no wonder my calculations were slightly off. I was thinking like a poor person. I'll be back there soon enough. Don't worry, guys. I'm a man of great perspective, and I know that by 2022, I will be, the podcast will be called Righteous Prick / Alms for the Poor. But I think that's it. I just, you know what? You know how this works. Some weeks I'm hilarious. Some weeks I'm furious. Some weeks I'm furiously hilarious, and sometimes I'm hilariously furious. But yeah, that's just what I wanted to say. So hope for Haiti. Hope for Haiti, link. And what else did I say I was going to link? Oh, yeah, Abbott and Costello. So I'll link Woke Abbott and Costello in the show notes, and I'll link the Hope for Haiti charity in the show notes. But I do thank you. I hope you can make some of those shows. If I have to rank them, there's no doubt that the Hartford show is overwhelmingly the most important show probably that I've had. I don't know. It could. I genuinely think for what my goals are, which are headlining, touring, comedian, I don't know if I've ever had a more important show. And it's not that I... And what's weird is I don't even know if the show is as important for me to crush, even though I will. It's more like this is the one. This is like the first time I've ever had a show where I'm like, the most important thing is that I sell tickets, not that I have a good set. I will have a great set, but selling tickets. So the Hartford show is most important by far. So I hope you can get tickets and spread the word throughout your family, friends. If you live in the area and somebody else liked my videos or likes my comedy, that's a buddy of yours or that you exposed me to, by all means, get them a ticket. But that ticket link should be up soon. And but obviously Magnolia, New Jersey, and the DMV shows hugely important to me too in terms of getting reps and just, you know, stroking my own ego, to be honest. And hopefully the people listening to the show are good fans and remain good fans. And I realize I can sometimes be sort of intimidating to people, even online when I'm not standing over them at 6'7". This isn't about you kissing my ass and shit like that. I have fun arguments with real fans. I talk shit to real fans, and it's all in the spirit of fan comedian relationship building. But don't fucking get on my shit. And like, if you don't know don't judge my career if you haven't bothered to actually invest in it or look at it. You know what I mean? Like, and certainly don't bring disrespect. Because I will cut you off very soon, because I certainly don't need fans who disrespect what I'm doing. Like that's not, especially when you're wrong on top of that. Like, I don't need fans who are like, we can engage, we can criticize, we can have a discussion in this, but if you're bringing like your post is totally useless, like, I get it. You're a fucking a pussy who needs to like be tough, bro. You like, cause you can't just respect my work. You've got to let me know that, dude, this is totally dumb, bro. Well, first of all, it's not. And secondly, fuck off. So on that positive note, this is the way, you know, you go right from YouTube church to podcast church shooting. No, that's not funny, because we've had those in this country, but you get the analogy I was making. I am doing verbal violence right after attending services on YouTube. So, but good thing I have a nice big smart TV, so it feels more like, it doesn't feel like I'm watching church on a computer. But thank you for listening. Thank you for doing what you do. I don't know. I guess, you know, I have so many things that I'm always promoting and new things I'm putting out. I just, you know, Hope for Haiti and the Abbott and Costello video will be in the show notes. So thank you in advance for watching or donating or just being decent fans. You are appreciated, and have a good week. Hopefully you're happy that this episode goes up early, or you might be going, wow, not sure I needed to start my week with this level of vitriol. Either way, get vaccinated, stay healthy, stay safe, and I will see you next Tuesday. Yeah.